Station number 17675, Sergeant Fred White, Reel 11.
Sergeant White, Reel 11. You were saying that you played for the paratroopers coming back from Arnhem after they'd evacuated. What impression did they make on you?
Well, they were in a pretty bad state, in actual fact. I felt very sorry for them. I felt rather guilty of me sitting down there playing to these chaps. I was pretty down in the mouth because of they did expect to have big success, which they didn't get, and took a lot of losses, must have seen their own comrades killed and left behind and wounded or that type of thing.
Did you have a chance to speak to any
of them?
No,
I didn't, no, in actual fact.
Do you think they appreciated the music?
Well, yes, I think so. Yes, affair. But anyway, after that was over, we was then sent one day into Nijmegen itself. There was a old theatre there, and when we got there, it was packed with troops to hear a concert we're going to give. I'll go back a little bit now, because when we was in Belgium, I think through welfare, on some of the concerts we went to, they supplied a girl singer, which is quite an attractive girl in actual fact. And we found out what things she could sing, and then we used to accompany her. She wasn't a particularly good singer, but being attractive and good personality, she all went down well.
Do you know what she'd been? Had she been a singer before the war? Was she a professional singer?
A semi-professional, I should say, yeah. Anyway, on this particular day, she also came into Nijmegen with us, and she also sang there as well. But Nijmegen was also under fire from the German artillery, and in the main part of crossroads where the traffic had to go, it was a nightmare for the military police directing traffic there, because they were all getting shelled and several of them got killed on that. And this particular day, when we were playing in the middle of the program, a shell had hit just on the outside of the building where we were. There's pandemonium going on. Everybody thought, you know, we were going to, everybody stood up. Anyway, the bandmaster immediately started playing, called the girl forward there, and she started singing there. Everybody sat down, we finished the program.
Do you remember what song she sang?
Oh, dear. Typical songs of those days in the war songs from the American dance bands. What were they playing in the mood and things like that?
America Patrol.
Yes, they were playing that type of music for them, which they went down well. And then we had a very good tombo player, and I should know this song really. She's singing there, and he has to accompany her, standing up, playing this trombone to her as well. It went down very well.
Do you know who was looking after her? What was her?
She was always taken away afterwards by some welfare officer, and then she disappeared. So, oh no. During our travel, sometimes been sent out somewhere. This is a thing that happened once. We were sometimes only given a map reference, given a map and a map reference to go to a certain place. On this particular day, it was getting late afternoon, and we were travelling along this road, and all of a sudden we were stopped by a military policeman. Asked us where we going, so we showed him on the map where we were. He said, well, he said, no doubt the Germans will appreciate you if you give a concert there. Somebody made a mess up in the staff work this time and got the wrong map reference. So, but anyway,
You knew the unit you were supposed to be meeting.
Mm. You were telling me that you'd been given a wrong map reference and you mm. might have been to play for the Germans, but you were stopped in time.
Well, as it happened, the we did know the unit what we was going to play to, and the military police did know where it was, and we got put on the right direction.
Do you remember which unit it was?
All I know that it was an artillery unit, and that was another say unusual thing to be playing, because we were in the sort of a old barn there. We could see the guns all around there, and we'd be playing, then all of a sudden half the audience would get up and walk out. Oh, are we all that bad? And all of a sudden you outside they'd be letting off their guns, and they come back again and listen to the rest of the concert. And this went on all the time. There was apparently every now and again they would send a few salvos over to the Germans.
What was the country like around there, if I can remember?
All pretty flat and farmland, really. That's what it was. We were then sent back then to Calais, because the first troops were going to be sent to England on leave. And during our trip down to Calais, I decided that we wouldn't go through Brussels, because that's an awful place to go through with transport. So I thought myself, well, we'd go a bit to the south of it. Now, just prior to this, had been the what they call the Battle of the Bulge had been on, which...
Did that have any effect upon you as a band?
No, no, we was a bit too far north from that at that time. But the Germans had been pushed back. Anyway, as we was going along, we had usual RASC transport. The driver said to me, he says, I'm getting low on petrol. I did my nap over that. I said, well, don't you carry reserve petrol with you? You know the length of the journey you've got to do. Didn't anybody at the other end say no? The driver's completely dumb about it. Was in the middle of nowhere, just open country. What the hell are we going to do? God must have been up there looking after us, because 2 or 3 miles after that, along this deserted road, was a great big heap of full petrol cans of petrol. It had been a dump, I suppose, put there for the push that's been going on and got left behind.
Nobody guarding it?
Nobody there at all. Anybody could have walked away with the whole lot of it. So we filled up the petrol tanks and took some with us as reserve. Most unusual thing to see, that all that petrol, they just when we wanted it. Anyway, we arrived in Calais, another very old barracks there, French thing, and lo and behold, we was there on the quayside when the first troops went to England. Go on, honey. It was on the photograph for the news, for the cinemas and all that time, I think. It was on there.
So you were playing the troops abroad when they went?
Yes, we didn't go with them. We just played the troops abroad.
So you'd be on the jetty as they were loading.
So we did that 2 or 3 times. And then we got then sent to Ostend in another old barracks there.
Were you doing the same kind of duty there as at Calais?
Yeah, so from there we was sent round all the towns then.
All the Belgian towns?
Around the Belgian towns. Mostly to civilian population. And in one case when we got there, a place called Ronnie. We got there and we was all billeted out with civilian families. We had a small army place where we went for our meals though. But The first night I was there, I was with this particular family, and they said, we're going out tonight, and we'll be out all night because there's a curfew on, we can't get back. I said, oh, all right then, where are you going to take me? Well, it was the dance they took me to, and we danced there all night. Because of the curfew, that we couldn't get back. Made a pleasant change, anyway.
Sounds as though you were well received by
the population. Yes. Oh, in Belgium, we were very well received. Mm. And then later on, when the weather got really bad, we was then put in a town called Diest. And the artillery had taken over a restaurant come dance hall, taken over completely, and they was using this as a sort of a place where the artillery chaps could be go in for a week or something as a local leave. There was not enough room for us to be billeted there, so once again we was put out the families. The only thing is, they couldn't feed us there. There wasn't enough room. So there was, a house was taken over completely empty, except for a few tables and chairs. And we had to do our own cooking.
Where did you get your food from?
We got it from the artillery in the in this restaurant place. They drew our rations and we drew it from them. And two of our chaps who had been in Egypt with me, who had done it before, they was detailed as cooks.
How did they take that?
Oh, pretty well in their stride.
What were the rations like in Britain compared to those in Egypt?
Oh, it was better than when it was in Egypt. It was definitely more of it. We still travelled around from there to different units and all that, because the front itself was pretty static at that time. Nothing much happened.
This is the winter of 1944.
Yes. So from there we went up to Holland again, into Eindhoven, and there we was put into a small theatre place with a lot of dressing rooms in it.
Yes.
And that's where we was billeted. But once again, up the road further, there was a small British unit where we fed. Once again, round in different towns in Holland we went to. And then came the big push over the Rhine, and we was given orders to pack up and follow them.
When you've been doing these concerts, travelling around in Belgium and in Holland, when you were playing to units...
Units and civilians.
And civilians. When you were playing to units, were they all from one division, or were they spread out
across the whole world? Different divisions as well.
And was there any sort of geographical restriction on where you would go to play to the civilian population? Or did you go everywhere?
No, it went everywhere.
Who was actually controlling you at that
time? This again is still from welfare, seemed to be doing it all.
Yeah. So you got your orders from presumably from an army level.
Oh yes, from an army level.
Did you ever go in to play in the American area while you were?
No, we didn't do it.
Just within the British.
No. Now you mentioned area. Waterloo just now. Though on one of our travels, a long day it was, and we got to Waterloo. And lo and behold, I saw there was an American unit there. I stopped and I said to the bandmaster, I said, I'm going in there so we can get a meal. So I went in there. I said, any chance 30-odd men having a meal here? Yes, if you sign for it. So we went there and had a good meal with them.
Did
like asking, is there?
No. Did they understand the significance of the place they were at?
Who the
Americans?
It didn't come into conversation, no, I don't think they did. Yeah. Mom, we only went straight into a dining room and they gave us the food and we was away on the road again.
You were just en route.
Yes.
Yeah.
As I say, then we had these orders to follow the army up and we went over the Rhine, over a Bailey Bridge that had been built. Remember going over that?
Do you remember where you crossed the Rhine or when?
No, I don't know exactly. It was a fairly north part of it, but the north part of the Ruhr, because from when we got over the other side, I can't remember. Oh, yes. We went through a town called Cleve.
Yes. What condition was that in when you went through?
Well, I was going to say this. It was completely in ruins, and somebody from the army has stuck up a notice there and said, this was Cleve. All right, after passing there, we had to go to a place called Emsdetten, which is a little bit further north. When we arrived at this town, no damage, or we couldn't see any damage done to it. And we was put in a hall type of place next to the fire station. I always remember that there. We got settled in. There were several rooms in this place. And in one of them, when I opened up, what did I see there was a beautiful pair of timpani drums. Not a mark on them. Now, ours, God knows how many years old. It could have been 50 years old. And all the travelling around the shell part, which is in copper, they're all badly dented there. So I thought, well, spoils of war, exchange is no robbery. So I took theirs and left ours.
Do you know whose band they'd be?
I don't know. No, there was nothing there.
Could the fire service have had a band?
I suppose they could have done, yes. Mm-hmm. But no other instruments were there, only these two timpanis.
Were they the same sort of pattern as yours, your regimental ones?
Yes, yeah, very much the same they were. So, I don't know what they thought when they saw this old one still left there.
What did you make of Germany when you got into it? Because it was your first visit to Germany, wasn't it?
Well, all I was saw, except for Cleve, I mean, the first part where we crossed over the Rhine, everything was in ruins. And the aftermath of armies passing, burnt out vehicles and that type of thing. Didn't see very much of the population, not till we got to Cleve itself.
Yes.
You often saw then houses, something white hanging out the window.
Yes.
I don't know why they did that. I mean, we're not asking the civilians to surrender, long as they just kept to themselves for the time being, which they did do. After that, we then went to, was following the army up, and I can't remember this place. It was just more or less like a small village place, and British troops were in there. We were expected. An officer came along and said, how many men are you? I said, 34. He said, right. He looked at the houses, said, 1, 2, 3, 4 houses. Went straight into these houses, said to the civilians there, you got 1 hour to get out. Which they had to. And we were put in.
What did you feel about that at the time?
Well, I said to the chaps, I said, these poor people could be slung out. There were some outhouses sometimes in the gardens. Some of the civilians went there, or they went with neighbours. And, of course, everything was left behind. I said, well, be fair. Don't do any damage. That's what I said about it. So we was only there a few days, and we moved on again. So I take it they went back in their houses.
Did you see anything of the civilians who'd been slung out of the house you were in?
Yes, well, in actual fact, we did see that the house I was in, there was an outhouse at the bottom of the garden. I could see them moving around there. One woman, probably a young woman, came up to me and she spoke a little bit of English. She said, would I post a letter for her? I said, what for? Oh, she said, well, it's to a Frenchman. But I wouldn't do it, though. I didn't know what was involved in it.
Did you speak to any of the other civilians?
Not at that time, no. Because there was already out, there was going to be the non-fraternisation ban on. Well, he wasn't supposed to talk or anything to do with the German civilians. Right, from there, we then got orders to move on again, and that was the first time I saw an Autobahn, which we then went along. Of course, I was quite impressed with that. We left the Autobahn after a bit, and we moved into Lüneburg.
On the heath.
Yeah. In actual fact, we went, as you come into Lüneburg itself, from the way up from the road from Celle and Münsterlager, there's another place we pass there, and you go into Lüneburg. And immediately on the right hand side, there's a large barracks and houses on the left hand side going down. And immediately, what's the most surprising thing I saw then was German troops sitting on the roadway. This was late afternoon, fully armed, just sitting down on the side of the road. Now, I think what had happened, that they'd had surrendered and been kicked out of these barracks.
Had you heard about the surrender?
No, not at that time. Just these particular troops had surrendered.
Ah, so it wasn't a general.
Well, it wasn't the general one. No, yeah. Not. We got there just before that.
Yeah.
And we didn't stay in that barracks. In actual fact, Lüneburg's got three lots of barracks. We went into the other side of the town, and all through the town was more German troops than was British troops. And all that was looking after them was the odd military policeman. And then women were coming out the houses, giving them some refreshments if they got anything for them. They looked very sad and worn out. And although they had their arms, they could have taken Lüneburg again if they had the willpower, I suppose. But anyway, next day, we was in this other barracks. Next day, they'd all disappeared.
What sort of physical condition did they seem
to
be in?
Oh, they was in pretty bad condition, they were. They looked really that their morale was gone. So then the surrender took place at Monty's HQ, and that evening we went on the Lüneburg Heath and played at Monty's HQ.
Do you remember what you played?
Or light music for everybody.
Was Montgomery himself there?
Yeah, but I didn't actually see him, though. I think he's probably still busy with Top Knobs and all that, not with us.
Sorting out the details.
Yeah.
Who did you play for? Who was
all the troops around this headquarters.
So that would be 21 Army Group.
Yes, yes, was the 21st Army Group. Actual fact, when we got in the jail, we wore the badges of the 43rd Div.
Yes. Well, your 5th Brigade, your 5th Battalion was 43rd
yeah,
Div,
there,
wasn't
there,
it?
Yeah, yes. And we start wearing their badges as well then. Because they came into Lüneburg afterwards.
Yeah. Did you see anything of Major...
Yes, we were attached to them for a bit.
Yeah. Do you see anything of Major General Thomas, the Divisional Commander?
No, I can't say I did.
Did it make any difference to you in any way, being part of 43rd Division?
No, not really. The 5th Battalion wasn't there all that long, but they did do the guards to the people from who'd been in charge of the Belsen concentration camp. In fact, one day I went down while the trials were on. One day I went down and listened to a part of it, and the 5th Battalion were doing guards on it. And I always remember the woman's name was Irma Grease. I can't remember the man's name. They hung him afterwards.
Did you actually see any of the concentration camps yourself?
Not till later. We then, once again, got called on to do a victory march past, which we did in Lüneburg. And we did the first church service in a German church in the middle of Lüneburg.
Was that just for the British troops?
Just for the British troops, no, no. There's still no contact with the Germans at all. We then went around touring again, and we came back to Lüneburg. The 5th Battalion had gone, and the setup there was a battle school, 43rd Battle School, and we was attached to them, and they'd set up a sergeant's mess in the battle school there.
What was your role in the battle school?
Well, it was nothing to do with the battle school. We just happened to be... it was decided that it was going to be based in Lüneburg.
Right.
And so the battle school had taken over part of the barracks where they could accommodate us. The German barracks had been very good as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. How did they compare with our barracks or the Belgian ones at Borg Leopold?
Vastly superior.
In what ways?
Well, there was better built. You had double glazing in those days. Not exactly what you've got here now. There was, in other words, there was two lots of windows.
Yes.
Everything was centrally heated. There was plenty of storeroom in the basements and also in the attic where they could, large enough with cement floors in the attic there, where they could do training as well undercover. And storerooms in the cellar. Big storerooms.
How many men per room?
Four.
Whereas how many would there be in England or in Borg Leopold?
Well, I mean, in Bodmin we had 20. So just one big long barrack room.
It's a very different scale, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
What about the dining rooms and feeding arrangements?
Immense big kitchens, all modern facilities there, big dining rooms, everything they had there. Well, just prior to that, though, after the armistice surrender had taken place, lots of the British prisoners were making their own way back.
British prisoners of
British,
war.
British prisoners of war. And loads of them came into Lüneburg in all sorts of transport, bicycles, old cars and things that they picked up on the way. All sorts of dress, even seen one chap coming with his top hat on. And they would come into the barracks and they were immediately fed and clothed, questioned and all this type of thing, and then flown back to England because there was an airfield in Lüneburg, so that was quite handy to get them out again. And the cookhouse was open 24 hours a day while this was going on, so there was always food there for them directly they came in. Lots of them brought in their Red Cross parcels, and in the rooms afterwards we saw them spewed all over the place where they vacated. And incidentally, during the day, we had to play for them.
Did you have anything much to do with them?
Yes, we spoke to quite a lot of them. Especially on one occasion, we was playing there, and lo and behold, who should be there was one D. Suleiman. He was a big chap, and he had been a bugler.
Had you known him personally
before
the war?
Yes, had known him. And he only could just stand there and stare at us. He couldn't believe it. And during his 2 or 3 days there, he wouldn't leave us. Kept with the water on. In fact, he was a pretty top bloke. The first time he saw us, you could see tears in his eyes.
Do you know what had happened to him? How he'd become a prisoner of war?
From the desert.
Oh, I see.
From the 1st Battalion, yes. Right. He got captured in the...